I recently briefed the African Union Peace and Security Council and the UN Security Council on the situation in South Sudan. And as I told both of those bodies, the crucial issue right now is continuing the peace progress on the peace process. On the positive side, the transitional government is functioning with activities well underway within the cluster of ministries. State governors, as you know, have been appointed, but as you also know, there's been continued to be delays finalising the number and appointments at the county level. This is being worked on by the parties, but it needs to be resolved and agreed upon quickly so that that power vacuum at that level can be resolved. Progress has been slow in other areas as well. The cabinet is meeting irregularly, and people tell me that they would like to see the president and the vice presidents meeting more often and more closely together. The transitional National Legislative Assembly is yet to be reconstituted, so necessary new laws are not being passed and progress on the constitution has been delayed. Critically, there has been no movement on the area of security sector reform. Other countries have emerged from conflict. The successful path they have followed is to bring together soldiers from all sides into an inclusive armed force. You only have to look at a Uganda as an example. Then, over time, after training and reorganisation, it's downsized and shaped into the nation's armed forces. And that requires organisation, resources, and above all else, courage to do this. At the moment, the process is stuck. It hasn't moved past the first stage where forces are trained and graduated. Urgent action is needed to move this process forward. COVID-19 has slowed down the peace process, but the pandemic is not entirely to blame. The peace process and the peace agreement is limping along and it needs to move much faster. My concern about the delay is that it risks pushing elections out well beyond the timeline of the agreement. This will add to the growing disillusionment amongst communities about whether the political will exists to give South Sudanese citizens the opportunity to choose their leaders. So we really do need to urgently breathe new life into the peace process. The international community and regional partners play an important role, but the parties themselves must also step up their efforts to regain lost momentum. In that regard, I'm pleased to see the resumption of talks between the government and the holdout groups in Rome next week as part of the process mediated by Sant'Egidio. We urge all parties to come to that meeting with a genuine willingness to secure durable peace. We all know that South Sudan is facing huge challenges. We see oil prices falling, revenues dropping, and long delays in paying civil servants and security forces. The street exchange rate, as I'm sure you all know, has doubled since March. Rising prices are putting enormous burdens on ordinary families. The role of the government in managing the country's finances is pretty straightforward. Step one, account for the money coming into the country. Step two, account for how that money is spent. It's a simple process, but what it requires and depends on is transparency and accountability. And every citizen of this country, as is the case with every other country in the world, has the right to know what is being earned by the state and what is being spent on their behalf. And that information is not available in South Sudan. There has been no public record of government expenditure since 2017. I'd like to touch on the flooding that has devastated the centre of the country with hundreds of thousands of people affected, particularly in Lakes and Jonglei states. Humanitarian workers are doing what they can in extremely difficult conditions to meet the needs of those affected. UN agencies are trying to raise additional emergency finances to meet those extra needs. But it's important also to be tolerant at this time. The situation will put pressure on already limited resources, and there's the risk of tensions rising. Those displaced need support right now until the flooding goes down, and then, and they should, return to their homes. Conflict is adding to that suffering, as we've talked about before. From January to July this year, UNMISS documented 575 incidents of subnational violence, which is three times higher than the number compared to last year. As a result, we are often receiving requests for support from our peacekeepers from communities around the country to send peacekeepers in to help cool the situation and encourage reconciliation between groups. In the last few weeks, due to a change in approach by the SSPDF, these kinds of operations have not been able to be put in place. For a number of years, we've had an agreement to notify the South Sudan authorities when our peacekeepers move around the countries. We do this because we have a respect for the sovereignty of South Sudan. However, there is no sign of similar respect from the SSPDF for our need to have freedom of movement to protect civilians and to build peace. As a result, we've had to report these persistent obstructions to regional and international players, including the Security Council and the African Union. It tarnishes the reputation of the SSPDF and it will have knock-on effects into other areas of cooperation. Before I finish, I want to update you on the process of transitioning the protection of civilian sites to more conventional IDP camps. I'm pleased to report that a memorandum of understanding was signed with the Jonglei governor, and that's led to the Bor POC site being redesignated. This means that the camp is now under the sovereign control and protection of the government, as with other IDP camps around the country. State authorities have committed to ensuring that no one is forced to leave, and UNMISS police officers are working with their local counterparts to build capacity. Of course, the humanitarian assistance to these people will continue. The same transition may continue for Wau and Juba POCs, depending on the cooperation we receive from the government. It's a gradual process, but we appreciate the willingness of the local governors, security forces, and the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission to work with us.